Welcome to Duna Dargye Temple at Lions Roar Dharma Center. And we'll begin with narrative prayers, narrative meditations, I should say, rather, on page 3. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took 7 steps on this great earth and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The 3 worlds are not like you, who is free from dust. Matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, field of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. Through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil-gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, to the Sangha also I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all 3 ever devout homage, to all worthy of respect, bowing with bodies as many as all realms, atoms, in all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous action. Accumulate virtue and goodness. Subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, look at lightning and clouds. Look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I'm enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen, and may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala, together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our bodies, speech, and mind. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessings. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nyate Yami. And now we'll do the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, the direct word of the Buddha. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time. The Bhagavan was dwelling on Massive Vulture's Mountain on Rajagriha, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then, through the power of Buddha, the venerable Shariputra said this to the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, said this to the venerable Shariputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly, beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so on, and up to and including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to and including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly completely awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared, Tayata gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhi soha. Tayata gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhi soha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from the concentration and commended the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya of Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that. It is like that. One should abide protection of wisdom just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the venerable Sharadbhaviputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan.
Now, good morning. Can people hear me in the back? Yeah. I think we still have yet to buy one more microphone for this weekend. You know, need a headset, right? Is that right? We need to get the headset still. So, yeah, so I'm putting out a fundraising pitch for that a little bit. We'll have like a headset for Rinpoche or for a translator. Dana bought one. We have one in the past, but it it pokes your ear way out, you know. So like even Venerable Steve, who was translating last time, had to take it off, you know, and it's a little bit crackly. So Dana suggested we have a little more sophisticated headset. Goes underneath, right? A little underneath. So I want to do a little fundraising for that today. It's expensive, you know. How much is it? It's crazy. It's around $800. But it comes with a lapel thing, too. Don't worry, I'm getting to the Dharma talk, you know. But it takes so much effort to be a translator, or so much effort that I don't want it to get in the way, and I want people to hear the teachings without static and without pain for the translator, or even if Rinpoche decides to use it, right? Yeah, because what happens sometimes, actually I prefer for Rinpoche use it. Last time, like, Kenshin Rinpoche was here, and of course we had the mic, but then he'd lean back. Kind of, can you hear me now? Yeah, he'd lean back like this, you know, and then I know people couldn't hear, right? Can you hear me in the back? Yeah. Yeah. So so actually the mics themselves are maybe better for like question and answer for, you know, the umze, the chant leader, which Dirk does very well, or Peter. And maybe it's better for Rinpoche, you know, so it's behind his ear and, you know, so he can move around and you're not going to lose him, right? Honestly. So. The Heart Sutra is a dialogue, the one we just read out loud. And in the practice of the Heart Sutra, it isn't just getting the point of emptiness or perfection of wisdom or something like that. But in doing the practice of Heart Sutra, you want to be able to take the different voices and make them your own, the different positions, the different people in the Heart Sutra. So we hear in a way right away from Ananda, the Buddha's attendant, who said, thus did I hear one time. So that's one voice, one position in a dialogue. And then he's telling it, and then we have another voice come on, and no, that is Avalokiteshvara or Chenrezig in Tibetan. So that's another kind of person there, in a sense, another position. And then he's talking to Shariputra. Shariputra was one of the Buddha's incredible disciples. So the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara is giving kind of like a teaching, you know. By the way, the Buddha is like silent here, right? The Buddha was in profound perception, samadhi, wasn't saying anything. So then Avalokiteshvara spoke up. So we could say have Ananda's position, the rememberer, the initial speaker, then the silent Buddha, and then the Shariputra speaks up and says, you know, how should any son of the lineage, or you know, and then train, and then Avalokiteshvara speaks. So you got this dialogue going on between the two. So that's how many positions so far. Got Ananda, Buddha position, Shariputra, Avalokiteshvara, right? And they have this dialogue going back and forth. Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara ends up doing most of the talking here. And then towards the end, the Bhagwan, sometimes translated as Lord, the Buddha speaks up at the end and arose from that concentration and said, oh, this is great, you got that right. And then you know, he spoke at the very end. So you have these four positions: Ananda, the Buddha, Shariputra, Avalokiteshvara. Isn't that right? Did I miss one? Well, we're listening to it too, right? So we have it's kind of hidden fifth, right? We're kind of that we're kind of listening in, right? So like that. So, and Maitreya is Abhisamaya Lankara. So we try to go through and analyze the very famous teacher and famous text, try to analyze the Heart Sutra, looking at these five different positions as different insights. I'm bringing this up because Buddha Dharma is a model that emphasizes dialogue and arriving at the truth, arriving at things together in a coordinated way. It's not like just one person saying, this is it, and all you guys shut up and listen. So like here in the Dharma Center, it's interesting for those who haven't been to Asia or been to another Dharma Center. Like we have a service that entails some ritual, but standing up, maybe your bows or singing. But if you don't want to do it, you don't do it. You don't have to do it, right? With no Dharma police, right? So here we you know, actually in Asia, you would just go along because people are polite, to tell you the truth, you know. I mean, they're just going, and they understand, but, you know, you go along. But here in America, we need Dharma to be intentional. You need to know, like, what position are you taking in the mandala here? Are you just, you know, kind of listening, which is okay? Are you speaking? Are you being spoken to, you know? Are you in deep samadhi, you know? So if you're saying the prayers and you kind of like hit something and you don't like it in America, well, at least here, Lion's Roar, you can skip it, okay? So that's sorry. There's no other Dharma Center, no other Lama that will say that. I guarantee it. So if you're going along, I don't get it, so I'm not going to say it. So, okay, don't say it, right? Because here we want you to learn to say, I'm choosing to say it. I know what I'm saying. I know who I'm talking to. I know who's talking to me, right? That's the wisdom mind. You know who's talking. You know who you're talking to. You know who's talking to you, right? You know who's listening. Isn't that it? That's it. So we want to model that here at the center. So sometimes if you want to just kind of sit there and listen and just hear the mantra or like watch people like, whoa, they're bowing or they're doing that, then that's fine, you know, or just listen and let the sound come over you. So that's totally fine. Just please don't take out your cell phone and start talking. That's the only thing. But I've even softened up on that. Like, if you need to look at the message, you know, like, okay, just look. But look intentionally. Like, don't, you know, if you're meditating, you know, I just have to look. You should fight it, actually, as a distraction. But there's some times where, like, okay, I can't meditate, so I'm just going to look. And, okay, you look. And you go, oh, it was just an Instagram, or I was, you know, so, you know, like that. So in Dharma, in meditation, in the truth, you want to know, like, what position you're taking in the dialogue in a situation, and you want to make that intentional. That's the wisdom mind, right? So you know where you are. Like, I'm recounting a story. How many times do people, we all kind of like, and this is what happened, and we recount a story, right? We tell, like, usually how somebody kind of was nasty to us. I would like people to come forward every once in a while and go, hey, this great thing happened to me, and this Sangha member was so nice, and I just got to tell you all about it. That would be nice. Some people do that, actually. But anyway, so, you know, that you want to be, you know, intentional about what you do when you know what you're doing. So, if in the meditation after the talk here, after a break, if you think, okay, I really have to think about, you know, what I'm going to do this afternoon, then just do it. Don't do halfway. Don't think, well, I'm going to pretend I'm meditating, but I'm really thinking about this, right? So you make a choice like that. So that's the inner workings of the Heart Sutra are really important. It's not just the point of, like, wisdom or emptiness or what does this mean. It's understanding. Are we telling a story about what we heard? Are we in deep meditation? Are we in this state of oneness with the dialogue going on? Are we taking the position of Shariputra? Are we the questioner, right? Are we taking the position of kind of the teacher, Avalokiteshvara, and then the Buddha is taking a second position, arising from concentration, and saying, oh, that was really good. And then, in a sense, we have, you know, sixth position, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan. So this is kind of like the position of like Vajrasattva, you know, like the sixth. So like you're the completely indestructible being. Like that's great. That's great. You know, just the complete realization is when you just kind of say, "That's great. You got it. That's great." Like that. Like that. So our practice is all about dialogue, and the Buddha's realization was called in Sanskrit paticca samuppada, which means interdependent co-arising things that arise together and they disappear together. I like to say for Americans, who we get a little confused, you mean like it's just all floating things around? So I say independent co-arising. So we're independent beings that arise together. We do have a self, right? Yeah. So that self, the one that has an agency that's on the driver's license, it needs to be able to say, "I'm arising with others," right? I rise in harmony, in dialogue with others. It's not when the self says, "I rise solely by myself, unconnected with others," then that's a false sense of self, individual self. But when it says, the self says, I arise, you know, with others, then I arise as part of this dialogue, I arise as part of this situation together with others, then we're asserting our independence, but it's an independence based on connection. It sounds easy, right? But usually we go one side or another. Usually we just kind of like, we become too willful and just say, it's just about me. Or we become completely codependent on the other side. It's just about merging and it's just about you and I don't know who I am. We go to extremes. So the Buddha talked about the middle way between extremes, where we arise with others as independent but connected. It's really strange, don't you think? So, like, I call it weird. So we have... trying not to co-opt something here, but like LGBTQ and then weird. So it's weird. Some people ask me, what are you, you know, then we could, of course, we get that straight, then S, LGBTQ, and then, so I just say I'm weird. Okay. Because the weird world means this. We have this sense of initiative, independence, and responsibility, but yet we're in congregation, we're in a situation with others. And we can move the situation around. Sometimes we're silent, sometimes we're the questioner, sometimes we're, you know, going to be the answerer. It's very interesting. Maybe we have time for some discussion. So we should model that, you know. People should say, okay, I'm going to take the role of the listener, or I'm going to take the role of being in deep samadhi, or I'm going to take the role of the questioner. The questioners, however, need a microphone. So.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Maybe Dana will get up and grab the microphone and then
Thank you, Lama. This is I think Chi and I were talking about this sutra just before the talk, your talk started, and it was just perfect. I wonder how important it is to understand the meaning behind the mantra, and maybe because I'm a writer I like etymology, I looked up the Sanskrit definitions of these words, and I have kind of an understanding for myself.
What did you get for the English translation of Sanskrit?
So I understand that gate is like gone, padagate, gone all the way, padasamgati, everybody goes all the way, bodhisoha, what enlightenment, it's beautiful enlightenment. So my understanding...
That's a very free translation.
That's pretty free. Yeah.
That's okay. I mean, like...
It's not a scholarly translation.
Yeah, this is okay. You know, yeah. So this is the dialogue, right? Yeah. So tadyata means kind of like thus. So yeah, is it gone or is it going? So sometimes we translate in English, we say going beyond, going completely beyond. Bodhi has a more like standard, Bodhi and Buddha are kind of a little bit the same. So sometimes Bodhi's translated as awakening, you know, like Bodhisattva or enlightenment or something, but awake. And then Swaha, it has interesting translations. Like Swa means like auspicious or this is great, or kind of exclamation like fantastic, or if we say so be it, it sounds kind of, it's more like we, you know, like that. What do you think? Is it going or gone? We should take a little poll. Yeah, let's take a little vote. Who likes going?
I think it's going.
And who are the goners? The goners. There are no goners are here, right? They're gone. Right. Right answer. Yeah, that's good. Love it. Yeah. Yeah, it's a very dynamic mantra, yes. So what's it like to be, you know, in a continual state of creativity going? What's that like? What do you think?
Well, I think it would require to be totally in the moment, because you can only, I mean, you can create with what's around you, what you're independent, what you're co-arising with, not with something that happened already 20 years ago. I don't know. It's dynamic, as you say. It's moment to moment. It's every moment. Something comes in. What are you going to do with that? Something comes in the next moment. What do you do with that?
What do you do with that? We need a dialogue there. Like,
yeah.
Okay, so what do you do? What position? So, okay, a little bit like helps out. So what position do we want to take? So you got to be intentional. Like, I'm going to take the position, I'm just going to be the Muni, like Shakyamuni means the silent one. I'm just going to... Okay. Or are you going to ask a question or answer a question? Or are you going to acknowledge? You know, like the Buddha at the end acknowledged, like, oh, that's fantastic. You know, so which position do you want to take with going? Or how do you know which position to take?
Yeah. I have been relating to this as sort of like an idea of going to enlightenment, or going to the awakening and everybody coming with me. But I don't know if my understanding is
that's a bodhisattva kind of like, I want to take everyone with me. That's fairy style bodhisattva. Like king style is like, I'm going to go first and then and then help you guys later. And ferryman, I'm going to go along with you. Shepherd style is everyone else goes first and then I'll go. Generally shepherd style, you know, it's like, I'm going to let everyone else go first, get on first, and then I'm going to go last as seen as the most profound level. But we actually should do all three. You got to be, these are tricky. You have to do all three. But as far as the practice goes, we have to know in the moment, like, what position are we taking? You need the microphone. Yeah.
Thank you. If I could take the position of Shariputra for a question.
Are you addressing this question? Or
yes, like a continuation. Okay. If we go as accepted as going or go beyond, what are we going beyond when we go further beyond? If we, like, the way that I interpreted it was like the first two goes are kind of the delusions of, you know, just the unreality and the usual state, like the natural state, I guess. And then the paragate, or the go beyond, being more as like the enlightened state of going beyond that delusion. But what's going even further beyond with the parasamgate, or like the way that I understood it, it was go even further beyond is the definition of that.
And the question is?
What is even further beyond than enlightenment? Or am I misunderstanding the second go beyond?
If this was Asia, I could bring you up here and hit you, but I can't do that in America. Then you'd know. Okay. It's always your direct experience. Okay. It's always your direct immediate experience. It can't be anything else. So when we're doing the practice, for those people that have done retreat with me for Mahamudra and Dzogchen, who, you know, we go over Gaab Dorje's 3 points, you know, introduction to the nature of mind, then, you know, developing certainty, just one thing only, and then understanding that thoughts and emotions, all phenomenon, are self-liberated. So it always has to be your direct immediate experience, you know. So you know, but it's tricky. Then we think, you know, then we start forming conception around, you know, our direct immediate experience. Like, we start thinking, well, what would I got to give the right direct immediate experience answer? But that would be concept two, right? Yeah. So we need to do more practice, but it is always going to be your direct immediate experience, like that. But for the point of the practice on the path, the you know, definitely the going thing is first established. Like, you say, okay, I'm in the position of the questioner. I'm in the position of someone, we could say the petitioner. I'm in the question of the seeker. So that's really important. You know, like in Zen, they use the nice term, the way-seeking mind. Susan's heard that, right? The way-seeking mind. So then it's a very open mind, you know. So like traditionally, in Tibet and Japan too, the same style. Like if the abbot or your teacher asks, like, you know, who are you? That's a very profound question. I mean, it's like, what position are you taking? Okay, so you might just say your name. And in a way, that's kind of like totally okay. Okay, I'm just taking the position of my particular self, you know, so that could be okay, you know, so bite me. But the other thing, you know, the teacher will see, is that the only position you can take? Are you stuck on yourself? You know, so a lot of times students that have been around for a while, they would say, I'm a seeker. Like that, you know. I'm a seeker. I'm a questioner. I'm a seeker. Like that. So we know we're in that position, like that. And then that establishes the immediacy of your experience. You know, like, I'm a question, but I have no idea, is, you know, like a very profound place. Then you're going to actually hear something. But we could be in the position of, like, Avalokiteshvara, you know, we could be in the position as, like, who are you? Well, I'm here to tell you something, right? We could. You have to know how to take that position too, even with the teacher, like, say, who are you? What do you? Well, I'm here to tell you something. Okay, tell me, you know, like that. So we know which position we're taking, like that. That's your immediate situation, right? The immediate situation isn't some blank situation of thinking like, I don't know, some spacious thing with, you know, like it's always like very concrete. Yeah, it does make sense, you know? So, like that. So we don't. Both my teachers in Zen and Tibetan are remarkably the same. This is how they would teach in Asia too. They would say, "You're not even worth hitting." They're not into abuse. I have to get, you know. So, but like sometimes for direct experience, you got to just kind of like, you know, like what is this, you know, like. Come on, you know, like that, right? So you elicit, you know, a direct experience out of somebody like that. You know, so very much in Asia too, Dharma Seed. Like sometimes, you know, like if someone's offering you something, you know, then you're in your kind of, like they're just ritually offering you some cookies or something like that. And then, you know, you're in your normal place like, oh, I'm getting a picky. But then if somebody immediately draws it away, then you'll see immediately what position you're in, right? Because they'll pull it back very suddenly, and you'll see your position. I'm calling it position, not just ego, as a sense like, well, that's bad, but like your position. You know, usually we get like, well, why'd you take that cookie away? You know, well, something will happen. It will reveal your position. So as teachers, and I would say as chaplains too, you know, we're training chaplains here. Like we have to help people come to realization of what position, what immediate position are they taking. So you have to be really brave to say to a teacher, I'm not taking any position. Because who's the one that whose tongue just moves, saying, Buddha does not say, the Buddha is very quiet, taking no position, the beginning of Heart Sutra. So the Dharmakaya, the ultimate nature, has no tongue, right? Quiet, serene. It's very difficult to take no position. These days, everyone has a freaking position politically. It's just nephal, you know, it's like, I mean, we do need to speak up in Dharma, but we speak up knowing what our position is, so it's skillful, right? We can speak truth to power, but when you know your position, we don't lose it, right? We don't become violent. We don't disrespect others. We keep the dialogue going, right? Because Shariputra could have been a little bit pissed off at Chenrezig Avalokiteshvara because Avalokiteshvara said, actually, you know, so Shari, what's, you know, any son? And he said, you know, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage. So that's very, you know, like screaming Mahayana, like, just so you know, it's any son or daughter of the lineage, it's inclusive, you know, like that. So Shariputta at that time could have said, I'm out of here. You're always bringing up your feminist crap. I'm not listening to him. No. So Shariputta, you know, hung in there, which was interesting. Yep. So it was your immediate experience, but it's hard to get in touch with that because we have so much, you know, formulaic. Like that. We have time for, yes, hello.
Now it's green. Thank you. I'm wondering about the structure of the narrative. I never thought of it before in terms of positions. But now I'm wondering if the way the narrative is structured and created itself, it's like a living illustration of interdependent emergence, in that all of those positions really kind of need one another in order for any of the richness to happen in a meaningful way. So I'm just kind of wondering about, I had never thought of it like that before. Because in other religious traditions, it might be there's a narrative and there's an author. And in this case, the dialogue appears to arise co-creatively from the participants. all the different positions. Mm. So I'm just kind of wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, that's kind of our Buddhist no position or interrelated position situation, you know, Madhyamaka. So, you know, like, so that's why I say, you know, that we always want to be in the middle. Yes, it's arising. It's a shared awareness. It's arising between us. It's arising together. So the Buddha mind, which is us, has this unique ability to notice the connection and notice the individuality piece, in other words, our kind of private agency, at the same time. That's incredible, you see. But as human beings, we get kind of confused. You know, we take one side or the other. So you always have to see the two truths at the same time. And seeing the two truths at the same time, the conventional and the ultimate, then you have a realization. We can do that. It's unbelievable, you know. So,
and the conventional and the ultimate are also co-emergent
together. Yeah, co-emergent, right? Totally, yeah. This is like, we're free, you know. This is unbelievable, you know. This is like, really, you know, and we can do it together, and we can have individual initiative, and we do things together at the same time. And, you know, so in Tantra, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding Tantra as being Kama Sutra, just pleasure. We like pleasure, but it's really using the body and our existential situation as the real teaching, because it's very interesting. So if your hand moves out, walking out the door, you know, or your foot, I'm hoping all of you goes with it, right? You don't want to like cut out, but yet the hand or the foot can initiate. So the interdependence, the independent dependence, I call it sometimes, or independent interdependence or co-arising, means we have this ability to join and have individual initiative at the same time. So that's what we're trying to train to here at the temple. Like, I always want people to work together on projects, so I start all these projects, and I want them to also learn how to take initiative, right? So, you know, like step in when, you know, something's not working, or come up with a new idea, and but at the same time take into consideration other people's positions. That's difficult, right? But it's actually fun. So, yeah, maybe one more question, comment.
Hello? You mentioned something about the true truth. What is that?
That's my poor pronunciation. So the two, as in the numeral two truths. So in many of the Buddhist teachings, you find out, you know, just describing kind of, this is just the way it is, description of things, right? There's this and this and this, and this happens, and things are impermanent, or things exist this way, and things are just described in kind of totally horizontal way, right? It's just like one truth. But also, in other teachings, he talked about the two truths. So things seem to exist this way, but yet they really exist another way. So the two truths was mostly developed within the Mahayana great vehicle traditions of the Buddha's teachings. But so the two truths are really saying, it isn't just that there's just one truth and then everything else is false. There's the conventional world, the agreed upon world, which is not ultimately true, but then there's the complete ultimate truth of emptiness. So there are actually two truths, you see. So you're seeing things from at least two different perspectives. So usually people have just, there's just one perspective, right? You usually just say, this is the truth, and I'm right and you're wrong. Or you're wrong and I'm, you know, whatever. You're right and I'm wrong, whatever. So with the two truths doctrine, it opens it up. So there's all these variations, you see. So there's basically like, well, there's a dialogue, because I'd be interested, like, well, what's going on with you? How do you see things? Right? That's important. We're interested how you see things. So we could say, in a way, there's multiple conventional truths, because each one of us has our own perspective, isn't that right? The fact that we each have arise, though, together means that none of the perspectives is the sole perspective. Therefore, it's empty of being the sole perspective. Yeah. It's interesting. That was a good question. There are two truths. There is the truth. It's two truths. But actually, you can't find two truths as a separate thing. You know, the truths arise together, so you're not going to find one truth over here and one truth over there, right? Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. It's like a rainbow, you know, so a rainbow arises because we just chanted in the praises to the Buddha like it's a rainbow. You know, it's like drops of dew. Rainbow only arises because we're seeing it from a certain perspective, and the water and the light, and our brain, you know, forms a rainbow idea, right? Yeah. La la. So I'm going to assume you're all taking the position of the Buddha right now. So, and then you can all say, that was great. The Buddha's either kind of, that's very profound. The Buddha's either like taking the position of complete, you know, Dharmakaya, complete, you know, no position, and then finally saying, you know, Mazel Tov. So let's take a short break, and then we'll do a meditation on your position in life. How's that? The stretch is okay. Talking is okay now. Yeah. I'm going to break a rule of mine and give some meditation instruction. In the spirit of Mark Twain, just because good advice is never taken is no reason not to give it. So... usually we think of mindfulness as, you know, mindfulness is a big term now, right? Everyone heard of mindfulness? Like, you haven't, not in California. So mindfulness, so paying attention. But usually we think mindfulness is like there's one mind paying attention to like one phenomena, right? One object. That's important. We generally start that way because people's minds are so chaotic that we just like just do one thing. But the next approach is we actually have to have two minds in a sense, two functions. One is paying attention to the phenomena. Like if you're paying attention to your breath or a Buddha image, either physically in front of you or imagined. And the other is paying attention to attention itself. Like what's the quality of my attention? So I visualize that as kind of coming in from from an angle a little bit. So we have like maybe a straight line. This is metaphor, okay? So a straight line, you're just looking at your breath or paying attention to it. That's the, you know, just mindfulness per se, not forgetting what you're looking at. But then the introspection is like you're actually looking at the mind that's looking at the object, right? So it's kind of triangle approach. So not only are you keeping a visual or keeping attention on your breath or something, but you're also paying attention to attention. Those are two, you're doing two things at once, right? All the psychological, neurological, mindfulness-based things that are generally popular in the West now from MBSR and things like that are generally like teaching just like just pay attention to one moment at a time, right? And Mahayana and Vajrayana particularly, we see that as a good start when people are really chaotic, but life doesn't happen one moment at a time. Does it? No, it doesn't. So we have to learn how to pay attention and also to pay attention to the quality of the attention. So if you're paying attention to your breath, then also pay attention to the quality of it and to what's happening, which you're doing anyway if you're noticing you're drifting off, right? Then you're bringing it back to your breath. So that, in a way, is introspection. But on top of that, also look at, like, how is it that I'm able to do that? How is it that I'm able to pay attention? What's going on there? What is attention, in other words, right? We always assume, oh, I know what attention is, right? So to notice that you're drifting and to notice that you're interested in attention itself takes a thought, right? In our tradition, thinking is okay.
Hey.
What we're looking at, what we want is we want to train non-thinking intention and thinking intention to work together. Where some meditation things are just into like let go of all your thoughts, and which is, that's a bad idea, ladies and gentlemen. That is a bad idea. It's also even a worse idea to blank out your mind. That's why I did drugs and drank. So, you know, blank out your mind, you know. So you want the thoughts and the attention, which is non-thinking attentiveness and thinking attentiveness, to work together. If your thoughts and if your introspection and mindfulness are coordinated, you have a very stable kind of pyramid there. Yeah, well, you're just going to try it. So you're already okay. you're already doing it. You're already doing it. You just don't know how it works. So we really have to pay attention to how you're doing. We get interested in how do we do this, and by looking at how we do it, we learn how we do it. The famous poem by this poet I knew when I practiced up in Nevada City, Gary Snyder, some of you know, he wrote a poem called Axe Handles. And he said, when making an axe handle, the model is close at hand. Because you make the axe handle with a prior axe. That's the secret of Tantra. The model is close at hand, right? So we don't go in for blank mind in this tradition. We don't just let go of thoughts that are not directed toward the project we're on, right? But you want to have the thoughts that direct you toward the project, whether it's driving or talking to somebody or threading a needle, right? Thinking's okay. It's going the same place as your attention. Capiche? All right. So we have 18 minutes. So, this is practice, right? So there'll be no grades, and you can stay in the class. You know, you don't have to leave. Few announcements, and then we'll do closing dedication and long life prayers. Some people wonder about long life prayers. Do we really think, like we're thinking, we want the Dalai Lama to live, 1,000 years or something? Well, we could if he didn't get older, but. The long life prayers are so one's life force and bodhicitta, the spirit of your life, the spirit of helping, continues, right? Like that. So the Dalai Lama returns, Dada Rinpoche returns, and I return. So the other night, Sabina says, do you think we're going to see each other past life? I go, yeah, but next life, right? Of course, past life. But she already said, you what? I bought a temple with you. This was 4 years ago because it was her income, basically, that gave us the okay. And on top of all our Dharma Rajas who contributed, I don't know, down payment, like five people in the Sangha, maybe contributed together $300,000. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Five individuals just said, we're doing this thing. But then if you do the long life prayer for me, then it's saying, I'm coming back to Sacramento. So then I'll have to tell Sabrina, you know. She says, it's enough to be with you. That's hard enough. But now you're going to bring me back to Sacramento. But I will come back to Sacramento, you know, so you're looking for a long life, you know, for everyone's to continue their Dharma practice into the next life. So I want long life for everyone, right? Long life doesn't mean does that mean I have to live and be sick for the rest of my life? No, long life means, you know, you're carrying forth your Dharma life from one life to the next, right? That's clear. Because Dharma is about healing. The Buddha did not say, I'm Lord of the world, didn't say, sometimes we say Bhagavan, but that's Lord's, Bhagavan is just kind of like, we think you're great, you know, respect, but he didn't say, I'm the Almighty, I'm a God, didn't say, I'm ruler, but he accepted when people said, you are the King of Healers. He accepted that. He accepted Buddha and he accepted King of Healers. So that's why we put a particular emphasis on, Medicine Buddha, Healing Buddha. And this coming weekend, of course, we're having Dr. Kalzang come along with Jada Rinpoche. So, I don't know. I wouldn't go out of town. I'd be here. So I hope to see you again. It's incredible. And then also Wednesday, Lion's Roar has helped sponsoring Wendy Garland, a Dharma teacher that wrote a wonderful book, Stars at Dawn. For people that know the Buddha story, it's like the Buddha saw the star at dawn and woke up. So we have some flyers, right? See in the back? So this Saturday afternoon coming, the 10th, Dharma will be in evidence. be given bodhisattva vows, and he will be blessing the chaplains and also blessing the Tara Madonna shrine, the Drell Kung, there, that green. Very unique. There's nothing like it. There are no other, as far as I know, no other Vajrayana, American Vajrayana chaplains. Does anybody know? No, there is not. There is no other Tara Madonna anywhere on this planet. There is not. So these blessings and this forward momentum in the Sangha, you know, it's very unique. So you're all very lucky to be here. Me too. Okay. Let's do long life. Some of you will be coming back to Sacramento. Who's willing to come back to Sacramento next life? Let's hear it. Come on, let's hear it for Sacramento. Yeah, we'll be here. Okay, good. All right. Home prices will be different, and there will be no, the air will be clean. There will be no allergies. Less cars, yeah. Okay, let's do prayers.
So page 15. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel Bodhicitta that has not arisen rise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezi Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. May the teachings of the Buddha flourish. May the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May all migrators achieve happiness and may fulfill all their temporary and ultimate goals.
Losan, magical display of the deep awareness of all the victorious ones. Merciful giver of a stream of profound and vast instructions to the fortunate migrators. Please remain always unperishing, unchanging, unfading.
Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of objectless compassion, Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom, Vajrapani, employer of the entire host of Maras, Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the snowy land sages, Losangdrakpa, I make request at your holy feet.
Any other announcements that I missed? Garden? You going to say something about the garden? She's using the mic. That's great.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dana. We, as you might have noticed, our garden is a little stalled for the last couple of months. We are looking for some volunteers if anybody's interested in garden work. And I promise I will not hurt you or wreck you or anything. But there are some Dharma jobs that can be kind of small, little, you know, cobwebs and weed pulling or whatever, just a little bit. We talked a little bit about Lama, about cultivating our garden and stuff. We also maybe have some trees coming from the Sacramento Tree Foundation that we're going to want to plant. And so maybe we'll get a nice digger, auger from Ellen. She said she could bring it down from the lotus view and dig some holes. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the garden. And Brian and I and Peter can't do it all. And Darcy's also helping us a little bit. But she's a little wrecked right now. So not because of me. I didn't do that. But but there's little things that we can do or big things, whatever you want. If you're interested, please let me know. And I'll put together a garden list of names, and then when we have something that needs to happen, we'll send a call out and see what happens. Okay? No, like it could be whenever you want. Like Darcy came and she had a free moment, and so she went around and cut a bunch of bushes and stuff. I don't know what got into you, but whenever you feel spicy and you want to come and rake up some leaves, I think Brian would love that. So there's always some stuff. Also, we need to solicit donations from Green Acres and Home Depot or whatever. So if somebody wants to do letters for us and go around and try to get dirt and flowers, that'd be fun too. So it's not just all hard labor. It could be some administrative work if you're interested. So, right?
Yep.
I'd just like to say that on Wednesday, although we do have Women of the Buddha, we will also be doing the lunar practice here at 9 o'clock.
We can do many things at once. Yeah. guess. Okay. Anything else? Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. So in our tradition, the Buddha, left the palace, left the privileged situation, to use contemporary words, and went door to door asking for help. So we have to ask, people going, oh, they're always asking for money. So it's sometimes humbling, we have to do that, we have, asking for help is important, it's good kind of help, we're not asking you to, help our addictions, we're helping to ask for realization. So learning how to ask for help properly is the bodhisattva path, right? So we're always going to ask for stuff. It doesn't mean you have to do it, but you don't have to do everything. People that, do I have to give money every time you ask? I said, well, this isn't our style, but we're going to ask, right? So thank you so much for today. I'll see some of you later. More? She reminded you.
Just to remind people, we're at Medicine Buddha. We'll be on Friday at 7 o'clock.
Very good. Thank you, everyone. Yeah, good.